They worry about what's going to happen to you when you grow older?
We were born to die, that's all.
You were born to die?
Yeah.
What about in between the time you're born and the time you die?
Born to die? What about in between the time you're born and the time you die?
That's the question. What is life, Robert? What is life? Well, I found life an enjoyable, enchanting, active, and sometimes a terrifying experience. And I've enjoyed it completely. A lament in one ear, maybe, but always a song in the other. And to me, life is simply an invitation to live.
The Irish playwright who defies the calendar and is ever young.
You know, God, or nature if you like, dumps a little boy at the tick of a clock, maybe at the dawn of a day, into life, and a tick after, he dumps a little girl beside him. So the boy and girl meet very early. And God says to the little boy, and God says to the little girl, be brave, and evermore be brave.
In one village, we had an experience which I'll never, never forget in my life.
An Indian actress recalls a visit to a village during the Bengal famine.
It used to be our practice that after the show, we would come out and just appeal for whatever people could give. We used to tell them in very few words, sometimes through song even, extra song, and we'll appeal to give whatever they could for the people of Bengal. And on one such day, in a very small village it was, after the show, when we came out in the auditorium, we found there was tremendous commotion. One old woman, she must be about 55 more, or 60, or she was bent, and she was dragging cow right into the auditorium. I couldn't understand what was happening. And before I could recover out of the surprise, there she came and said, take this. I had no word to say. What could I say? I said that, well, and that's about all I could. All the speech or all the appeal or everything was gone, forgotten. It was the old woman who said that, my child, I have nothing else to give, but take this cow. It still gives milk, you know. And as you say that children are starved without milk, please take this. I'm an old woman. I don't need very much milk. And till I live, village will see to it that I don't quite starve. You take this cow with you. And she insisted on taking the cow, giving the cow to us. What could we say? We didn't want to deprive the old woman of the cow. More than that, it would have been very difficult indeed to take the cow to Bengal. Luckily, we hit on some idea and said to her that, Grandma, please look after the cow for us till we are able to make some arrangement to take this cow to Bengal. And it is our cow, we know. But you are just there. I mean, who can look after the cow better than you? And that alone persuaded old woman to take the cow. That was the India of that time. And we wanted to depict that India. I'm afraid art is very, very pale compared to real life sometimes. Very pale indeed.
Lay down, get out. lie down and get out on my knees and lap water out the trough with the dogs and hogs and things. So if my children have a better day than I had, that I don't mind doing it. And if it take me to have to lay down and go on home to my father, I don't mind doing that. So my children to get the freedom. I don't want my children to have the time I had. I had a time, children, y'all don't know. Don't nobody know what time I had. Oh, no.
Be nobody that'll put me out. Keep your hand on the block. Hold on. My rope gonna fit me well. Try it on at the gates of hell. Keep your hand on the plow.
You have to hear those best voices.
Says an American poet as he recalls a childhood experience.
When I was a kid, my uncle used to have a tremendous collection of those scratchy old orthophonic Caruso recordings. And especially on rainy days, but all the time, I had a passion for Caruso. I heard him a couple of times live, but even on scratchy recordings, I remember him best on scratchy recordings, because my memory of that is longest. But when you heard this voice, you not only heard the songs being sung, you suffered an expansion of your imagination. You discovered how well it was possible to sing these songs. Your very imagination was enlarged. You had a larger sense of expectation. You couldn't have anticipated that these songs could have been sung so well. On two levels. In the first place, you'd think just in the animal quality of the singing, Caruso would hit a high note, and you'd say, "This is as much as the human voice can do. You couldn't ask more of the human voice." And then he'd be beyond that; he'd exceed the expectation. But there's another thing. It took centuries to form the kind of consciousness that would sing these songs in this way, the kind of musical intelligence that touched the songs perfectly at every moment. We're enlarged by it. You have to hear those best voices. You have to open your imagination to Job asking his question. And when you have really heard that question ringing, you know the difference between a great question and a lesser one. And then you know the size of a human decision.
As human beings, we have to remember that if the issues between East and West are to be decided in any manner that can give any possible satisfaction to anybody, whether communist or anti-communist, whether Asian or European or American, whether white or black, then these issues must not be decided by war. We should wish this to be understood, both in the East and in the West. There lies before us, if we choose, continual progress in happiness, knowledge, and wisdom. Shall we instead choose death? Because we cannot forget our quarrels. We appeal as human beings to human beings. Remember your humanity and forget the rest. If you can do so, the way lies open to a new paradise. If you cannot, there lies before you the risk of universal death.
An eminent British philosopher poses the great question, and an American architect designer recalls how that question came to be.
I said, if Einstein is right, in due course, then he's going to affect the other scientists, and the other scientists are going to affect all technology, and they're going to finally affect society. So I said, if that is so, why don't we look ahead? And part of when I spoke to you about a transcendental position, one of the things I said, let's go ahead and see what the world will be like if Einstein is right. That year, let's see, this, we're talking 1935. A few months later, Lisa Meitner and her associate developed the first concept of the fission. Very shortly after that comes fission, and Einstein then when they were pretty sure that they had it, was asked to go talk to Mr. Roosevelt about it. You may remember, the only man who could probably convince Roosevelt of its really important aspect. When fission was developed, then it proved Einstein's formula to be right. The amount of energy in the various masses proved to be exactly what his formula said. Therefore, a practical application, the first practical application was a bomb destroying a man. I think that no, it didn't hit people in Hiroshima as hard as it hit Mr. Einstein. I'll bet.
I'm sure he was.
I think he was really shocked. and he became really the scientist who alone really stood up and, in his last days. He did everything possible to try to make science think about its responsibilities.
We have gathered here in Princeton. This institution of research and scholarship represents a spiritual bond encompassing all countries. I am grateful to all for assisting us in our work.
Серия у нас существует «Жизнь замечательных людей».
We have a series published in the Soviet Union of books about great people, and I just happened to read the one about Einstein.
И когда я эту книгу прочитал,
and after reading this book,
как роман,
it was like a novel to me.
День, ночь читал, читал.
I read it day, night, until I finished it.
Я сказал себе, я буду писать о нем.
And then I decided I have to write about this man.
A Soviet playwright discusses the hero of his forthcoming drama.
Это образ, который меня потряс.
But I want to say that the image of this great man has terribly impressed me as a human being.
И потряс потому, что в нем есть нечто такое человеческое.
This man has something in him which is so humane, so superb.
Идея, которая меня, так сказать, ведет, образная идея,
the idea which is guiding me in this play.
Трагедия в чисто греческом ее значении.
Is his tragedy. A tragedy in the Greek interpretation of this definition.
Невольная вина.
He is guilty, but he is not guilty.
Моя основная мысль, драматургию, как актер, он понимает, о чем mm-hmm. я говорю, сказать.
The main idea by which I'm guided and which is actually giving the tragedy its sujet.
Что этот человек, который пришел на землю из будущего.
It's the following, that this great man came to us from the future into the present.
Которому было трагически трудно в этом неустроенном.
It was tragically difficult for this man to live in this troubled
разделенном
world,
и злобном
divided
мире.
And hostile world.
Я поехал в Принстон.
I went to Princeton.
Правоверный мусульманин в Мекку.
Like a pilgrim goes to Mecca.
It's an odd thing. Politics, I don't know why, but they seem to have a tendency to separate us, to keep us from one another. While nature is always and ever making efforts to bring us closer together. And the last gift that nature has given us, a very extraordinary one, a very dangerous one, a very beautiful one, is the atom bomb. Nature, through the atom bomb, says, here you are, power of darkness or the power of light, choose what you wish. And mankind is going to choose the power of light.
I hope that we will make the wise choice, because everybody has agreed that the choice has to be made, and that extinction is a possibility of our generation, the first generation of mankind that's ever had this possibility in front of it.
A British writer of science fiction in a moment of conjecture.
When you look out at the universe, there are 100,000 million suns in this galaxy of ours alone, and if only, say, one in 10 has got planets, that may mean that to every single person on this earth, there's somewhere an inhabited world. That's about the number of inhabited worlds in this universe, one to every man, woman, and child on this earth. Well, it seems very unlikely that on many of those there won't be races that would regard us as somewhere back in the Stone Age.
A superior races, you said. You mean?
Well, I mean morally, yeah. Intellectually, philosophically,
no
scientifically,
wars
technologically.
That,
well, a superior race cannot have war because war is a self-liquidating activity, and I am optimistic about the outcome.
Either to destroy himself or to be perhaps even more noble than ever, is that it?
Yes.
So the choice is ours.
The choice is ours, and it's really a privilege to be born in this age, the most critical in the whole history of mankind. I remember the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. Well, that curse has been visited on us, but I don't think it really is a curse. It's a privilege.
And it could be a blessing, too.
It could be.
I've often wondered who would inherit the earth. we understand that the meek may inherit the earth, and of course that leaves us out. Will it be mammals, or will it be fish or insects?
Distinguished American astronomer on the subject of man, the elements, and risk.
In wondering about the future, and without actually trying to make a horoscope of humanity or of life on the earth, I have just tried to list down sometimes what are the risks we suffer. What will eliminate man if he is eliminated from the surface of the earth? Will it be the sun running down or blowing up, either one of those, freezing man out or incinerating him? No, because the sun's a good steady star, and as you know, it's pretty well thermostated to run for, say, 10,000 million years at its present rate, so the sun isn't going to play out. How about stars colliding with us? No, they're too far apart. Collisions would happen too infrequently. Say, in the next 1,000 centuries, no chance of that. I mean, a very low chance. Well, how about the Earth getting out of its orbit and running away and freezing to death in empty space, or plunging into the sun and boiling up? No chance. We know from our celestial mechanics that the orbit of the Earth is constant and will stay just about put. And so I think we're safe from sun, from star, from Earth. So now, must I say that it looks pretty safe on man for this future you talk about for the next 1,000 centuries? Yes, no. Because he had one deadly enemy that I didn't mention, an enemy that's at his throat and may succeed in returning him to the fossils and leaving life on the earth to the cockroaches and the kelp. You know what that enemy is, of course? That's man himself.
Will there be time to find salvation? Will there be time?
Picture of the two men clobbering each other in the quicksand in the valley at the Prado is, first of all, a horrible picture, a shocking picture. After that, you begin to see it within the context of this magnificent landscape, all silver, somber, magnificently harmonious thing, and in the midst of it are these two bloody idiots. And you see that if you could only get through to them somehow and tell them what they're doing and how they are denying by their very action the beauty and the harmony and the mystery that surrounds them. They're denying the fact that they're equally children of God, equally brothers. Somehow they would recognize what Goya so poignantly makes you realize in looking at the picture.
Who am I? Where am I going? What is death? Who is God? Why am I here? Here now we all ask. Children ask, and the Greeks ask, and existential philosophers ask, and every thoughtful person, who am I?
My Lord, what a morning, my Lord.
A British scientist writes of a particular moment in his life. On a fine November day in 1945, late in the afternoon, I was landed on an airstrip in southern Japan. I did not know that we had left the open country until unexpectedly I heard the ship's loudspeakers broadcasting dance music. Then suddenly, I was aware that we were already at the center of damage in Nagasaki. The shadows behind me were the skeletons of the Mitsubishi factory building, pushed backwards and sidewise as if by a giant hand. What I had thought to be broken rocks was a concrete powerhouse with its roof punched in. I could make out nothing but cockeyed telegraph poles and loops of wire in a bare waste of ashes. I had blundered into this desolate landscape as instantly as one might wake among the mountains of the moon. The moment of recognition, when I realized that I was already in Nagasaki, is present to me as I write, as vividly as when I lived it. I see the warm night, and the meaningless shapes. I can even remember the tune that was coming from the ship.
Yes, I'm gonna ask him. Well, is you is or is you ain't my baby?
This dissertation was born at that moment. For the moment I have recalled was a universal moment. What I met was, almost as abruptly, the experience of mankind. On an evening sometime in 1945, each of us in his own way learned that his imagination had been dwarfed. We looked up and saw the power of which we had been proud loom over us like the ruins of Nagasaki. The power of science, for good and for evil, has troubled other minds than ours. We are not here fumbling with a new dilemma. Our subject and our fears are as old as the tool-making civilizations. Nothing happened except that we changed the scale of our indifference to man. And conscience, for an instant, became immediate to us. Let us acknowledge our subject for what it is. Civilization, face to face with its own implications. The implications are both the industrial slum which Nagasaki was before it was bombed, and the ashy desolation which the bomb made of the slum. And civilization asks of both ruins, is you is, or is you ain't my baby?
Let us pray. Lord, number us, we beseech thee, in the ranks of those who went forth from this university, longing only for those things for which thou dost make us long. Men for whom the complexity of issues only served to renew their zeal to deal with them. Men who alleviated pain by sharing it. And men who were always willing to risk something big for something good. So may we leave in the world a little more truth, a little more justice, a little more beauty than would have been there had we not loved the world enough to quarrel with it for what it is not, but still could be. O God, take our minds and think through them. Take our lips and speak through them. And take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen.
Sometime I look up. I don't have to do nothing. Just stand and look up there. Just look up toward the Father. When I look up toward the Father, the tears come rolling down the entire bouquet under my neck. Say, Lord, here I am. When the storm, the wind get to tossing this tent from side to side, I call up the boss and tell him. I said, Lord, here I am. Ain't even got a shelter. Ain't even got a frame around me. You know me. Remember me here. Take care of me. Because I'm striving to make him my home. I'm working to make him my home. I'm bearing hard name to make him my home. I'm bearing my burden. I'm bowing down in the morning. Yes, I'm crying in the evening sometimes, you know, trying to make him my home. That's what it takes. I got to love everybody. I can't hate nobody. If you do me wrong, I still don't hate you for it. No, because I'm on my way, and I don't see nothing to turn me back. So I'm on my way.
I'm on my way. Well, I'm on my way to Canaan land. I'm on my way. Oh, to Canaan land. On my way.
Man is a long time coming. Man will yet win. Brother,
the earth over
may yet line up with brother. You can't hinder the wind from blowing. Time is a great teacher. Who can live without hope? In the darkness, with a great bundle of grief, the people march. In the night, and overhead a shovel of stars for keeps, the people march.
Where to? What next? Where to? What next?
Dame, ja.
Dame, dame.
Ja, dame, du dritte, ja.
Tutti orite.
Tutti orite, ja. Vi gitt vårt du en gang.
Ja.
Ja.
Happy.
Happy. The voices heard were those of Miyoko Harabasa and Joan Takada, Perry Miranda and a Chicago street boy, a Midwest suburban couple, T.P. Amarasinghe, Alexander Elliott, Lillian Smith, the Weavers, Simone de Beauvoir, James Baldwin, Marion McKeever, Georgia Turner, Gwendolyn Brooks, Bessie Smith, Salvatore Baccaloni, members of the cast of Brendan Behan's play, The Hostage, Pete Seeger, William Sloan Coffin Jr., Sean O'Casey, Shanta Gandhi, Mahalia Jackson, John Chardy, Enrico Caruso, Bertrand Russell, Buckminster Fuller, Nikolai Pogodin, Arthur C. Clarke, Harlow Shapley, the writings of Jay Bronowski, Carl Sandburg, and A Mother and Child.